Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Mansour El-Kahia, who is a Libyan-American author, columnist, activist, and professor of political science. Dr. El-Kahia is currently the chair of the Department of Political Science and Geography at the University of Texas in San Antonio. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Mansour El-Kahia.
Thank you for having me.
And Libya, of course, has been in chaos since the downfall of Gaddafi, but things have come to a head recently with rebels in the east taking over a number of oil terminals, and the government had an ultimatum to a North Korean-flagged tanker that if it left the port with this illegal oil, if you will, it would be sunk. And apparently there was an attempt, and naval ships did try to intercept as it left the port. There was an exchange, well, not an exchange of fire, but they fired on the tanker. Apparently, a fire was seen on board the tanker, and that the U.S. Navy intervened to stop what they thought would be a huge environmental catastrophe. Is that your understanding of the kind of drama that just took place yesterday?
I don't. The what's new to me is the American intervention. We don't really know where the tanker is. We assume it's in Egypt right now. It's sailed toward Egypt, and I think ultimately I think it's an Egyptian. It's an attempt by some of those members of the Jadran group in the east in Libya to sell the oil. And I think they made arrangements through some Egyptian firms, Egyptian personalities. I think it's standing in Egypt right now. But past me is I did not hear about the American intervention, isn't it? We're told there was fire on the tanker, but was never confirmed to us.
Well, apparently the Egyptian Navy is supposedly going to intercept the ship when it gets into, may well be already in Egyptian waters. But the North Koreans have disowned the ship. They revoked the Morning Glory's registration. Yeah. So, okay, what's going on here?
Well, I mean, I tell you something. This is, and it's quite honest, and I'm being very sincere with you, not facetious at all. But you know, this is part and parcel of the democratic process in societies that never experienced democracy. I mean, what you see in Libya is fragmentation that has been suppressed and compressed for many, many years, and it's beginning to emerge. You know, the problem in Libya is really very, very serious in the sense that. It's composed of a number of problems, not only one. On the east, in the eastern provinces, you have an ideological problem between the liberals and the conservatives, very much so like anywhere else. We have more tribes in the east than we have in the west, but there's no tribal problems in the east. It's really between the Islamists and the liberals who don't want an Islamic rule. In the West, the problem is much more different, in a sense that the West has never really been unified as the East has. And what you see, you have also tribes over there, but you don't have the tribal fights per se. You have regional, Masrata region, which has many tribes fighting against Zintan region, which has many tribes fighting against the Bin Walid. Regions has many tribes fighting against Washifana, fighting against the Amazigh. And so the conflict there is much more regional conflict, and each region trying to acquire and amass as much power as it can in this vacuum. And the truth is that the competition between them can be so violent, it can lead to annihilation. I mean, one region can, in fact, is capable of annihilating another region. And this is how bad it is in the West. And, you know, but that voice, you hear it much more within the parliament. The Congress today is made up, of course, of people from the East and people from the West. The people from the East, believe it or not, tend to be the Islamists and the liberals. And they're continuing the fight in the parliament. The West, the problem is different. In the West, you have the militias playing a very, very, very important role through their regions. So the Zintanis have a very powerful militia, which is represented in the parliament. And the parliament tries to keep that Zintanis militia going by giving it money. And so it's a multi-layered conflict. In all of this, Saronika, which is the East, is saying, hey, listen, this centralization of power in the West is hurting us. We have the poverty here, we have the oil here, we have the water here, and nobody's paying much attention to us. So this group of individuals, which is led by the former guards of the installations, the oil installations, said, well, okay, we'll go our own way. At least we will sell the oil, we will keep 50% of the revenues, and we will give the other 50% to the West and the South, which they saw as a fair formula. Of course, the central government in Tripoli is not willing to accept that. And they said, no, you are outside the law, and you have to be held accountable, responsible, and we have to arrest you. They can't do it because if a Western force comes into the East, it will be tantamount to declaration of war in the East. And these groups and the huge militia in the East has acquired kind of legitimacy because the East has been neglected for so much. And so the government is not willing to chance it to start a civil war. Today, they had no choice. On Wednesday, the head of the parliament gave an ultimatum to the groups in the East to open up the oil fields within 2 weeks and to relinquish the power. If they don't, the others will in fact mass against them and come to liberate the oil fields from them. Now, I'm not too sure that this is a very good formula, because ultimately you might have a civil war taking place in Libya.
So just to go back over what's happened in the last couple of days up to the point that you just mentioned, where the government, the central government, as much as it controls the country, has given the rebels in the East the oil terminals, 24 hours or whatever?
Two weeks.
But prior to this, of course, the ultimatum not to let the North Korean ship leave, and the escape of the North Korean ship was a humiliation for Libya's Prime Minister, Ali Zeidan. He was dismissed by Parliament and fled the country, apparently for Germany. Is that your understanding?
Yes. Now, here's the one more thing. You see, let me tell you, it was a poll taken. Believe it or not, polls are now being taken in Libya, which is really encouraging in a way. And over 50% of the respondent did not agree with removing him. Another 15% said that removing him in this way was not right. Okay? So he has lots of support. Now, he left the country, of course, but, you know, according to some sources which confided in me, in fact, he was told that the decision against him would be forthcoming, and 24 hours before the decision actually came. And so, I mean, he left, and we believe he's in Germany. I have not spoken to him, but I'm in the process of doing that, and I will get the better story behind all that. But you know, they have to understand something very important over here, that the structure itself of the government really gave the prime minister very, very, very little power. The prime minister was really, even though it was his threatening was all bravado. He had no power to actually carry out the threat because he had no control of the military. The control of the military is under the head of the parliament. And so when Zeidan told the head of the military about 3 or 4 weeks ago to go down to the south and confront some of the Gaddafi loyalists, the head of the military says, I don't take orders from you. You know, I take orders from the head of the parliament. And so whatever Zeidan did really made little sense. The problem lies in the structure of government. And I think the way it was set up by those who did 2 years ago is take into account that we don't want a dictator to emerge again, and therefore we don't give the executive any power at all. Now they're leading to regret it, because what's happening is that initially it might have been to avoid dictatorship, but now we have dictatorship of the council. And the council doesn't do things rapidly. And so, I mean, they spent 12 weeks discussing how to remove the prime minister, and they couldn't agree on removing the prime minister. And, you know, while they were discussing this, the affair of states were at a standstill. Nothing was got done, and people are frustrated and angry. And now there's more animosity and hatred and dislike for the parliament than there is for Zeidan.
And so what about his replacement, the defense minister, Abdullah Al-Thani?
Abdullah Al-Thani, supposedly he's going to be there for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And now within these 2 weeks, they're going to choose to select a new prime minister. But let me tell you, I mean, this is my gut feeling. I might be wrong in this, but I don't think they'll agree on a replacement. That is the source of the problem with Zeidan. They could not agree on somebody to replace Zeidan. and therefore this is why Zidane stayed in power. Zidane is not the most perfect of individuals, but you know, but he's better than the crop that we have now there. And even more important than all of this, he's being blamed for things which really are way beyond his capability. The Koreans did the ship, for example. The ship, you know, he gave orders to attack the ship. The Air Force rejected the order. He gave orders to the military to attack the ship. The military rejected the order. He could not do anything. He doesn't have a military. We have, Libya has maybe 7,000, 8,000 now soldiers in training in the United States, in Bulgaria, in Italy, in France, and so forth. So we don't. Libya does not really have a military to deal with right now. And so Zidane can make as much threats as he wants, but he really has no power to do any of that.
So back to the divide. And first of all, just based upon what you've just told us, Dr. Mansour Al-Kahir, it seems unlikely that this 2 weeks ultimatum could be exercised by the supposedly they're going to send special forces in. But you're saying that the minute that the government in the West moves its forces into the East, you're likely to have a conflagration. My understanding is that the historic eastern region of Cyrenaica was neglected under Gaddafi. Give us an idea of who the two forces are, the liberals, as you said, and the Islamists. Of course, you know, all we hear about the East is this constant insanity from the Republicans, in particular Senator Lindsey Graham, about Benghazi, which they've tried to turn into a domestic political issue, and it sort of clouds the real picture. So give us the real picture of what's going on in the East.
Well, we have the counterparts to Mr. Lindsey Graham over there in the East as well too, and these are called Ansar al-Sharia, and they are the fundamentalist group that emerged after the fall of Gaddafi. They acquired power very rapidly in a political vacuum and a military vacuum, training lots of youngsters now to actually fight the war of the establishment of a caliphate. And even more dangerous than all of this is that they've invited so many of these fighters and radicals from across the Islamic world. You have, I mean, what is this, 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, they had a huge conference of all the Al-Qaeda and other radical forces in Libya. They have three training camps in the East right now, okay? Three training camps that are training future terrorists. Libya's borders are porous. There's nothing to stop them from coming in. Libya is exporting the largest number of surface-to-air missiles anywhere. And in fact, even the United Nations just came up with a report on this issue. And there is no force to stop them. So there's no force, military force to stop them. The only force stopping them are people. People don't like what these Islamists are doing. I mean, Libyans are not radical by very nature, and they find what these Islamists are doing, these radical Islamist groups are doing, as being insulting to their own faith. And I assure you, large number of Libyans, and particularly in Cyrenaica, hated the idea of killing the American ambassador. And in fact, they came out in the thousands to demonstrate against those acts. But today, every single day, one or two, three security people are being killed by these radical Islamists, these fundamentalists. And there's nothing that we can do about that. And this is one of the main reasons why the government has used precisely the same thing against Zidane, to remove him, that the security in Cyrenaica is not being maintained and so forth.
So during this nonsense over the so-called Benghazi incident with Lindsey Graham, who's still beating the drum on it, it was revealed that the CIA did have a station there, and that was in fact the one that was attacked, where the Special Forces veterans were killed. They were apparently trying to corral surface-to-air missiles. That was their mission. Yes. Presumably, based upon what you just told us, if the Islamists have lots of surface-to-air missiles, they didn't complete the job, the CIA.
No, they haven't. In fact, you know, about 2 months ago, they caught a huge shipment of surface-to-air missiles that was in Algeria. It was on its way to Mali. And you know, had the radical Malian fundamentalists received that shipment, they would have grounded the French Air Force. And right now there's so many of those missiles from the Gaddafi days that are in play. The whole region has become very, very dangerous for any aircraft flying in the region.
So do you think that these missiles are being used in Syria?
I have no doubt. They're being used in Syria, and in fact, even much, much more so. In Syria, there's a recruitment of kids, of 17, 18, 19-year-old kids. They're actually being fighting in Syria. By the Islamists, by these Islamic groups. In Derna now, in the eastern Libya particularly, has been taken over by this fundamentalist group that has basically established a Taliban form of government in that city, and people are running out of it by droves, by hundreds. They're leaving the city because they can't tolerate that type of system. And there's nobody really to help Libya right now to deal with this conflict. The world is too busy, of course, with the new bipolar structure that we begin to see. A long time ago, I said the Soviet Union might have gone, but Russia is still here, and the conflict is going to continue indefinitely. And now we see it in the Ukraine. We saw it in Syria. And in fact, but particularly when you talk about Syria, in Syria itself, there's nothing we can do. There's absolutely nothing we can do. We're held hostage by a UN vote, you know. But Libya, there's a chance to do something in Libya to stem this type of violence, to stem this type of terrorism. And yet the United States government, Mr. Lindsey Graham and all his supporters over there, are doing nothing to prevent the reoccurrence of Benghazi.
So just in closing then, what about the Egyptians, which is now, you know, they're basically a new military government. They clearly have no sympathy with Islamists, given their treatment of the Muslim Brotherhood. Explain to us what you originally said earlier about who is getting this oil and the deal that was made between the rebels in the east of Libya and the Egyptians using this North Korean ship that the North Koreans have just disowned.
Well, you know, I know of the people who are advising the head of this militia group. And these advisors have very, very close contacts to Egypt. And I have no doubt that some Egyptian groups, at least some Egyptian maybe money is behind this whole affair. It's not a big shipment. It's $30 million or whatever it is, okay? And they got a cut rate price, you know. And so the Egyptians are in bad shape right now. They're in bad shape for energy. Even the military government is not on good grounds because they can't destroy half of the population. I mean, 40% of Egyptians tend to believe in the Muslim Brotherhood. You can't say they declare that they're outlaws, you know. And you're right. It's become a new military government that it was under Nasser or Sadat or Mubarak or any of those. But there's an opportunity for capital, and then capital was able to make use of that shipment, and to give some money to the militia in Cyrenaica.
But again, Sisi's government would not be sympathetic to the Islamists. So, the militia that controls the oil in the east, how do you characterize that?
It's a secular militia. It's not an Islamic militia.
I see.
You don't want to destroy secular militias. You want to destroy Islamic militias.
Exactly. Well, we have a record of doing the opposite. We toppled Saddam Hussein, who was a secularist.
That's
and,
right.
And you end up with a religious Shiite government.
Exactly. I mean, it's really funny. I gave a speech about the last week in Benghazi, and I said I left Libya, and it was a secular state. It was a state in the 20th century. I've come back to Libya, and now I find that the country is in the 4th century. Something's wrong somewhere on the line, you know? And they all laughed. They said, yes, indeed, you're very right about that. I said, well, if I'm right, why don't you do something about it?
Well, we'll leave you on that question, Dr. Mansour El-Kakir. I thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Mansour El-Kakir, who is a Libyan-American author, columnist, activist, and professor of political science. Dr. El-Kakir is currently the chair of the Department of Political Science and Geography at the University of Texas at San Antonio. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.